G'day.
G'day.
Yeah, it exists.
Hussein Kisvano.
Oh, fuck. Fuck off.
Oi, Huzzers.
Fuck. All right, I'm out. See you in the new year.
Welcome to the episode of the podcast that makes us all quit the podcast.
That's right.
Individually.
I've gone down to Bunnings and replaced all the snags with halal meat. They know that I'm doing it.
I mean, Riley did say that, like, he's prepared questions that are so infuriating that we'll probably all quit. So I'm just taking a head start and saying that I'm quitting now.
That's right. He's quitting to go move to Australia, where he's going to be an insurance underwriter, actually.
That's right.
It's in the spirit of the time between Christmas and New Year's. We have taken the time to write some quiz questions for one another based on the events of the preceding year.
We actually invented this format.
It's called Forced Fun.
Mm-hmm. We've got Jimmy Carr on for this.
Yeah, it's called the large, wide trivia of the past 12 months.
The big fat quiz of your
mom. It's like our version of what, you know, the Netflix thing, like Death, you know, like the Charlie Brooker thing he does at the end of the year.
Death to 2021 or whatever.
Yeah, Charlie Brooker does. It's our version of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And we're going to do this
TF wipe.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to have the same kind of world-weary cynicism that when presented with an actual plan to, you know, change things, of course, chose to proffer world-weary cynicism. Now, here's the thing. We've all taken months. So I've taken January to March. Who's on April to June?
That was me.
That's very good. I know Alice is on the next quarter.
July to September.
Eventful summer. And then rounding us off, finishing, and Q4, finishing up the financial year, will of course be Nate.
That is correct.
With Hussein having trawled through some of the more insane articles this year that we would do well to not forget.
There were a lot.
Yeah, columns are the Q5 of the year in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's the bonus level. It's where you can get a lot more, EBITDA.
That's right.
I guess this is a bonus episode, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It is. It's
don't
a bonus
say it.
Quiz.
Don't say it. Don't do it.
Oh, God. Q5.
We took
reading the columns.
God.
Yeah, I tried to do that sound, but it just comes out as, like.
You just gotta collide the two bits and do it Australian, like.
All right, children, who's ready for question one?
Just one question. Are we doing it like in university challenge style? So if we want to answer it, we have to also say what Oxbridge College we went to.
Yes. Say where you went before you answer. And each time you answer, you have to say a different educational institution going backwards in time to nursery.
Caldwell Kelly, Oxford Brookes.
Okay. Mm. All right. So I'm going to start my question. America has a proud tradition of civil disobedience for the cause of liberty, including but not limited to the Boston Tea Party in 1773, the Bonus Army in 1932, Martin Luther King's 1965 March on Washington, to name but a few. In this proud tradition also sits the patriotic Capitol uprising of January 6th, a day where red-blooded Americans from around the country flocked to Washington to mill aimlessly about in the House of Representatives, steal tchotchkes from the Lincoln Library gift shop, upper deck Nancy Pelosi's toilet, and frequently die of heart failure before repairing back to the Radisson Blue Hotel bar, their confusing point having been made. While Democrats decried these events as an assault on democracy itself and used them to propose and pass a range of sweeping and vague national security legislations, a package of sweeping and vague national security legislation, Trump himself said the rioters were, quote, very special. However, less is known of what America's first family was doing at the time. So the question I have for you, dear friends, what was Melania Trump doing while these events were transpiring? Was she A, doing her weekly Slovenian lesson with Baron, B, working out with her CrossFit instructor, Bradless, C, doing a photo shoot for a coffee table book about furniture acquired during the Trump's tenure in the White House, or D, designing a new type of curtain that hangs from the middle and pulls to the sides. So what was Melania Trump...
A Bradless diet.
What was Melania Trump doing while the Capitol riots were happening?
I think the curtain thing. I think the curtain...
Hangs from the middle and pulls to the side.
Bethay, what does that Indiana even mean? University yeah. Bloomington.
Yeah, Bethay, Ernie Pyle School of Journalism, Indiana University Bloomington. I believe it was C, because if it was D, the only way that could make sense is if the curtain was an offshoot of MyPillow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a patriotic curtain.
Yeah, it was C. It was definitely C. It was
yeah,
C.
I think so.
No, I still think it's the curtain.
Yeah. Are we all saying C?
Apart from
saying C. I'm going for the curtain.
All right.
Bloody Australians, you're such dissenters.
I'm going for the sickos option.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Dr. Kezvano is, I am afraid, wrong. The rest of you are correct. She was doing a photo shoot for a proposed coffee table book, which has not seen That's the light awesome. Of day. About antique furniture acquired for the White House by the Trumps while they lived in the White House.
You know, there is a little connection here. Something no one remembers is that Donald Trump, in his Grab Them by the Pussy tape, he starts that with possibly the best Trump sentence. And no one remembers this because it's completely overshadowed by him, like, confessing to sexual assault right after. But he segues perfectly to that from, she said... I want to get some nice furniture. I said, I'll show you where to get some nice furniture. Yeah. he's a man who appreciates some nice furniture.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who would absolutely love an Urkel chair. You definitely have a lot of those.
You know, tremendous things are happening at DFS. You know that they're having, you get 70% off in there. It's very, people won't tell you that.
He shows you where to get the nice furniture and then he grabs you by the pussy. That's a fucking, like, ride, you know? That's... Mm.
One minute you're looking at an Eames chair. So she was doing a photo shoot for a coffee table book about furniture.
Yeah, there was no nipple. It was very respectful.
Was it 2017? Remember when Melania did the Christmas decorations at the White House and it looked like some kind of fucking incantation scene from Stargate?
Yeah, it was the coolest that the White House Christmas thing has ever looked.
I gotta agree with Alice. That's the most awesome the White House has ever looked in history. Cool. It looked like a fucking Dark Souls level.
I was gonna say, exactly. I was reminded of the 1994 film Stargate, but yeah, like it looks like something where you've traveled through time or from a demon dimension. Like, just, it was unreal. I've never seen it. Melania Trump had this ability to, like, I don't know, to enrapture the most parochial Americans with what I would call, like, fentanyl grade Eurotrash, and it's really incredible.
Yeah, blood red undecorated Christmas trees lining an entire hallway.
That's
was fantastic.
The thing. I would buy that coffee table book. I would love to see, because
yeah, of course you would.
I love to see sort of crazy weirdos like that just try to do something for real. It's always really fun because it never comes off like they want it to, but it's always different from anything else you've ever seen.
Well, like the perfect Trump picture of him with all of the fast food, with all of the hamburgers.
Exactly. I would read that book. All right. Are we ready for question two?
Fire away.
We are.
The New York Times, Thomas L. Friedman, wrote of Saudi Arabia's enigmatic, millennial, reform-minded crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, quote, "My motto about bin Salman is simple. Only a fool would predict the success of his reform plans, but only a fool, in my view, would root against him."
Why do you have a motto about a specific guy?
Well, Thomas Friedman definitely does have mottos about every ruler of Saudi Arabia, each more laudatory than the last. That guy fucking loves Saudi Arabia.
My motto about MBS is, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Yeah. And nowhere is the sureness of MBS's, as he is known, plans to reinvent the Middle Eastern petro-monarchy than his idea to reinvent the very concept of a city using an entirely uninhabited, I assume I didn't have time to check, stretch of desert in the country's arid northwest region, and the cities of the future are being built in all manner of different shapes and sizes. We're talking about NEOM. The very first structure of NEOM, which is already filling up with creatives, technologists, thinkers, and dreamers, and sorry, I didn't have time to check this either, I just assume it's the case, is the line. A city built in a straight line, the shape of which unlocks numerous potential developments and quality of life improvements cities constructed in blob shapes have hitherto been unable to access for reasons so obvious they don't bear stating. Which of the following is not said in the line's promotional video on YouTube, which has thousands of views?
Yeah, most of
all from us and Tom Walker. A. So which is the following is not a line from the line's promotional video? A. What if we innovated in the public space? B. What if we could connect a million people with no roads, streets, or vehicles? C. What if everything you needed was within a 5-minute walk of wherever you are? Or D. What if invisible technology could generate a carefree urban space?
Caldwell Kelly, Croydon College. B.
Edwards, McDonald's University. I think it's C. I think it's the 5-minute walk.
Mm-hmm. Nate, Hussein?
Buffet, Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. I believe it's B. I think B was too fluffily worded. Mm-hmm.
Kizani Castle College, Durham, which is just like Magdalen College, Oxford, actually. A, because I'm pretty sure the other three were mentioned in relation to the Line City, based on my very bad memory. A is the only one that I don't necessarily have a recollection of.
Yeah. So it is Milo and Nate who are correct. It was B.
Oh, I was right,
oh,
too.
Oh, yes, Alice, also you were right.
Oh, so I was right and Milo was wrong.
Sorry, Milo was wrong. Alice and Nate were right. I just write the questions. I'm not Mr. Scorekeeper.
No, Mr. Scorekeeper is my little notebook here.
Yeah, it's next to my Mr. Coffee. It is, what if we could connect a million people with no roads, streets, or vehicles? You were right, that was too fluffily worded. That is, however, an ambition of NEOM, which again, I assume that they managed to achieve. I haven't checked. I didn't have time.
Right now, there's no roads, there's no streets, and there's no vehicles. So,
and they've connected a million people who are laughing at it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What if we innovated in the public space? That's the first line of the promotional video. What if everything you needed was within a 5-minute walk of wherever you are? That's also in the promotional video, and somehow they intend to do that. I don't know how.
Yeah, I mean, if you can walk like 17 miles in 5 minutes, everything's within a 5-minute walk.
Yeah, it's a city for power walks.
Or D, what if invisible technology generated a carefree urban space? Also in the video.
Yeah, of course it was. That one was a gimme. That was obvious.
Yeah, it's cool that by living in NEOM, you're as close as you can get on Earth to being in the plot of Total Recall. That's pretty awesome.
Give these people air.
What I liked most about NEOM was the idea that, number one, they would just like do a bunch of magic in like a layer underneath the main city, and then underneath that have a high speed train, but where realistically you could only like have one line. So it would be,
yeah, but you like jump out when you went into your stop and you just roll to safety,
which you can do when the city's in a line. You can't do that in a blob city.
Yes.
No, you would die on impact in a blob city. You need a certain shape. I think it's so funny that they just like that Saudi has decided, look, NEOM is basically a stretch of desert that allows us to announce whatever we want, and then we can just keep announcing stuff. We don't ever actually have to do anything.
Oh yeah, it's a perfect hype system.
Yeah, except of course,
it's a hype house.
Of course, it's a hype province of Saudi Arabia. But that's all.
They bring in Jake Paul.
But they actually did have to remove like people who just lived there in actual functioning cities to build. Yeah.
Well, that's true of a regular hype house.
What I was going to say was it's not really that far removed from like what like right wing tech guys are trying to do in Miami right now. And while it may not be like the line in this sort of like deranged sense, it is very much the idea of like, what if we can create, or like, what if we try to make this like hyper convenient city that just happens to run on effectively like tons of slave labor, but consists entirely of friends that I have on the computer.
It's also great that Miami's just going to flood and drown all of their NFTs. Next question.
Oh, man.
Drowning ape NFT.
I've been thinking about that because I follow a lot of like NFT people on Twitter now, just because, like the Melania Trump. Because
you want an NFT.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
You want to receive
I want
to
be in the Bored Ape Yacht Club. Yeah. You know, because like it's another example of like seeing them do stuff is just seeing like, again, a bizarre person try to do something for real and they just end up saying the most interesting and backwards things. So like there's because Bored Ape Yacht Club has now spawned many competitors who have identical looking apes with minor cosmetic changes, all facing still the same way. One was called Desperate Ape Wives, and it's like lady ones. And now one is called...
An ape that you want to fuck.
Ape Dads. And so the person who created it, they advertised it by saying, like, what if the dad community could accomplish what the female community accomplished with Desperate Ape Wives?
Great.
Awesome.
Perfect.
I love the female community.
For dance.
Question three. We have a quiz.
After a long and storied career as director of public prosecutions, Sir Keir Starmer became leader of the UK Labour Party, continuing and building on the socialist legacy of Jeremy Corbyn by adapting his thought for a more market-oriented and productivist vision of Marxism-Leninism as a key step in the development of a more fundamentally egalitarian society that could nevertheless compete with its rivals, the US and Japan.
Keir Starmer is the British Deng Xiaoping.
Does this make Andy Burnham fucking Bo Xilai?
Yes, absolutely it does. Thank you for spotting what I've done here, Alice. Keir Starmer theory is a product of the integration of the basic theory of Marxism-Leninism with the practice of modern laborism and the characteristics of the present era, the inheritance and developments of Jeremy Corbyn thought under new historical conditions, and a new stage of the development of Marxism in the UK, Marxism in the modern UK, and the crystallization of the collective wisdom of the Parliamentary Labour Party, guiding the cause of the UK's socialist modernization project steadily forward. Which of the following was a line from Starmer's speech, A New Chapter for Britain? A. For too long, Labour has failed to realize that the only way to deliver social justice and equality is through a strong partnership with business. B. A new partnership with British businesses is the only way to secure the future of our people. C. We would offer a British recovery bond to help families, savers, and businesses pull together to move forward. Instruments like these will go on to form the core of our platform in the future. Or D, they try to pretend this is a different Conservative Party, but you could have fooled me, which is difficult to do because I'm considered pretty sharp.
To confirm, the question is which is not or which is?
Which was. Which is a line.
Which was?
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay, I got to change my answer.
Bethay, not Catholic guy at Notre Dame for some reason who's really, really unhappy. My answer is A, because I recall that line. Or I think I do.
Yeah, I will also go A.
Kisvani, London School of Economics, but just as a bit. C?
The British Recovery Bond, okay. Milo?
Edwards, Anglia Ruskin College, Cambridge. I think it's the British Business Bond one, whichever one that was. Mm-hmm. That has such a powerful Starmer energy to it. It's an idea that says, look, give it a go.
A bond is very much like a yogurt.
That's right. It is A. That is the real line from the speech.
Racking exactly. Them up.
Yeah, that's
see, right. All the time that I felt not being fucking guilty about jacking off while being not Catholic at fucking Notre Dame University, I was able to read my books about Britain and get the answer correct.
That's correct. You did British studies at Notre Dame University.
Notre Dame's University.
Modern British studies. Just like the sort of culture and history of Orpington.
You know, really funny aside about Notre Dame is that they're constantly having to do repairs on the plumbing to remove stuff like condoms that have been flushed down the toilet because people are so ashamed to throw them away because they're not supposed to use birth control because they're Catholic, that like it winds up costing the university a lot of money every year, and I'm not making this up.
That's so cool. I love American universities. They're so crazy in different ways. Milo, your note on the British recovery bond, he did offer it. But he did not say that instruments like these will be core to our platform in the future. Because we have never heard of the British Recovery Bond again after that speech. I guess the idea wasn't very good.
There is nothing core to his platform.
No, precisely. All right, here's the next one. I'll go through this.
Looks great in a mouse suit.
I'll go through this next one more quickly. The progressive historical role of capitalism may be summed up in two brief propositions. First, the increase in productive forces of social labor and the socialization of that labor. But both these facts manifest themselves in extremely diverse processes in different branches of the national economy. Vladimir Lenin. We believe that everyone should have access to financial markets, so we've built Robinhood from the ground up to make investing friendly, approachable, and understandable to newcomers and investors alike. The Robinhood mission statement. There's no activity more genuinely emancipatory, democratizing, and fundamentally revolutionary, of course, than day trading, which we learned early this year. In the early months of 2021, an enterprising group of Redditors, fintech gurus, venture capitalists, SPAC impresarios, cryptocurrency innovators, and other assorted revolutionaries, armed with such tools as Robinhood and Trading 212, took on Wall Street and changed capitalism forever via a mall-based video game retailer, GameStop, which found itself at the center of a short squeeze attack on Melvin Capital, Lemon Research, and other institutions. Which of the following is not
Lemon
one?
Research is the three old guys sucking each other off.
But they all have like mortar boards on.
That's right, yeah. They're all invested in NFTs.
Which of the following is not one of the techs that went into production while it was still going on and GameStop had not even hit its high of 415, sinking back to its more reasonable 149 on the basis of a $2 valuation today? A. MGM optioned a movie based on a book that has not been written by the author who also wrote the book that became David Fincher's The Social Network. B. Netflix hired the screenwriter and producer from The Hurt Locker to write an adaptation of a different book that hasn't been written, but starring Noah Centineo. C. To the Moon is The Big Short meets Reddit. This TV series follows two roommates laid off from their jobs at GameStop and AMC who turned COVID into lemonade by using their stimulus checks to dip into the world of day trading. Or D, that OANN, the One America News Network, commissioned Squeeze, which follows three covert agents played by Gina Carano, Black Rifle Coffee Company's Evan Hafer, and James Woods from the SEC as they plan to sneak into Robinhood's server room and halt trading on GameStop to save the economy. But then they make a discovery about the nature of their mission that none of them expected. So which of those four is not currently was not immediately put into production?
Edwards, AC Grayling, Department of Jacobean Haircuts at the New College of Humanities. I believe that it is that Netflix optioned a movie.
Mm-hmm. Cordwell Kelly, BYU Institute of Paleontology Archaeology. I'm going to go A.
Kisvani, Clown College, Wolfson. Oh, fuck. I guess.
You got it the first time.
Clown College, Wolfson.
Yeah. The Clown Sub College of Wolfson College, Oxford. I'm gonna go with the OAN an option because it just sounds like even by their standards it sounds insane. But if it does happen to be that's the case, then that might be the moment I quit this show.
Okay.
Clown College, Wolfson College only has one of the many staircases of Wolfson, but ironically it has over 10 times the students of the rest of the college.
it's a sub college. Yeah. I don't know how the system works.
Bethay, University of Southern Illinois, go Salukis. It's D. I think that's just a little bit too far.
Yeah. Hussein and Nate are right.
Yes!
The OANN movie is the only one of those that's not real.
Oh, fuck. I misunderstood the question. I thought it was which one was real.
Me too.
You combine
too
many people into that for it to be real. Like, all those people would do something like that, but to have them all in one go is just too much. Evan Hafer.
Yeah, you lost me at Black Rifle Coffee Company.
And James Woods, like, come on.
I also feel like if you had said that Ben Shapiro's film company was going to do it, then maybe I would have believed you. OAN, like, isn't going to do that stuff because it's just, it knows its game and its game is just like cheap reproducible content.
Well, I've learned an important lesson about quiz writing. I have one more and then we can go on to the rest. Some great innovators like Mozart, Tesla, and Galileo are either scorned, misunderstood, or otherwise tortured in their own time as they seem to live in a world apart from our own mundane reality. In Australia, a simple farmer named Lex Greensill had an idea to democratize finance with a scheme that pays senior investors with money invested later by junior, more recent investors, supply chain financing powered by fintech. While this organization ceased to trade in March 2021, filing for insolvency, the potential for this arrangement to revolutionize all forms of procurement in the private and public sector is so obvious it need not be stated here. However, the innovations of these geniuses are nothing if not universalizing, and so we must ask ourselves, That may all be well and good for the procurement of typhoon fighters, nationwide pharmacy chains, or rail and road overhauls, but what of the little guy? Knowing full well that charity starts at home, Greensill allowed his neighbor in Cheshire, who ran a special needs school, access to his brilliant supply chain financing product. What was that neighbor's name? Was it A, Reginald R. Rustafolo, B, Paul Patrick Portobello, C, Barnabas Borbley, or D, Lucifer Lamprey?
Caldwell Kelly, Ecole Goliere, B.
So that's Paul Patrick. One vote for Paul Patrick Portobello.
Ecole Nationale Supérieure du Clownery.
Ecole Nationale Supérieure, in parentheses, inferior.
Yeah. Edwards, Académie Goliere, Durham. Laboratoire Goliere. Uh-huh.
That's where they make the most moisturized clowns.
That's right. Yeah, that's where they invent new types of blackface. I wanted to be Barnabas Baldley.
Okay. You're saying to Nate. We have one for Paul Patrick Portobello, one for Barnabas Borbley.
Yeah, Kizvani, St. Dunstan's Nursery, Gravesend. really good at the blocks. I think I'm going to go with another B.
Bethay, yeah. University of Chicago, Santiago de Chile campus. I'm going to go with B also.
What do you think?
Go fighting helicopters.
What do you think, Nate?
I said B.
Okay, Paul Patrick Portobello. So three for Paul Patrick Portobello, Milo for Barnabas Borbley. It goes to Milo. It was Barnabas Borbley.
No, it's yes, not. It
is. Yes, the lathe is firing, and I am in control.
Barnabas Borbley?
Barnabas Borbley, that's correct.
Fuck off. No, I quit. I resign. I resign my
this
commission.
This is from an article.
Creative differences.
Greensill and his neighbor, Barnabas Borbley, set up a meeting with Cheshire Council in 2018 to discuss the potential benefits of supply chain finance being promoted by Greensill's companies.
Barnabas Borbley is a Rick and Morty cutaway bit. Like, that's...
Well, the council never adopted the proposed scheme, determining that it offered, quote, no benefits at all. Greensill Capital nevertheless announced that it developed a revolutionary funding model with the special needs group that could reduce the financial burden on local authorities. Quote, Greensill is able to use fintech to identify and factor in future cash flows from local authorities and central government to their suppliers rather than working with historical data, the company announced in September 2020. Yeah, it was Barnabas Borbley.
No, it wasn't.
I'm afraid it was. I'm sorry. So those were my five questions. Why don't you all take it away?
All right. Well, I'm currently sitting at three, and I believe Milo is next.
Yeah. So I didn't do multiple choice for mine, but I think
that's fine.
A lot of the questions are quite easy. So April 9th. Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, well-known stunt driving enthusiast, died. But what was unusual about the vehicle used to carry his coffin?
Okay. I know the answer because you sent me it before as an example. Yeah. So I will not answer unless we are at a deadlock. No one can figure anything out.
I know this also.
Okay.
I think there are two parts to a good answer to this question, which is first of all, what the vehicle was, but also second of all, how the vehicle came to exist.
Mm-hmm. Riley Quinn, Niagara College School of Viticulture. Was it his Range Rover that had been redesigned to work on biofuel?
You're sort of in the ballpark, but no.
Half marks. Yeah. It was a Land Rover Defender that he had designed himself as a hearse.
And also that he had been working on, according to the papers, for 20 years. The most British energy possible.
He just loved death.
He just loved death and couldn't wait for it.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a letter written into the Telegraph that I once read, which began with, "Dear sir, I look forward to my death."
The other thing that British guys love doing is they love just like sitting around with their friends and then apropos of nothing saying, I'm going to make a Land Rover that's proper and not for tarts. Because a few Absolutely. Have done this.
I love doing this.
Yeah. Tarts who refuse to die. Not like me because I'm hard.
I love dying because I'm so tough. That's why I went to the Capitol riot.
How do you like to arrive at an appointment alive, pussy?
Okay.
So, April 18th, six UK football clubs attempted to break away from the Premier League to form the European Super League amidst controversy and memes which were described as, quote, quite racialist. But which were the six UK clubs?
Can I get half marks, an additional half mark for saying that the person who mentioned the memes were quite racialist was the guy you bought your car from?
Yes.
I have nothing on this one. I have one out of six, which okay. I figure gives me 1/6 of a mark.
Any advance on one?
Okay, that's fine. Riley Quinn, South Haringey Junior School, senior class.
Haringey, Niagara on the Lake.
Yeah, South Haringey, Niagara on the Lake, Junior School of Viticulture. So the six teams were Man City, Man U, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspur, Chelsea, and then also Barcelona.
No, you gotta go UK teams.
Oh, all the UK teams.
One more
teams.
UK team you're missing.
Okay. Oh God. Man City, Man U,
Arsenal, right?
Arsenal, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, very obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
My local team. Or is my local team Hotspur? I have no idea. It's one of the two. I'm sort of equidistant between them.
You're
do not find out where I live
losing that.
You're
probably closer to Tottenham there, I would say. Yeah.
I think so.
Joke's on you. You need 3 points to triangulate Riley's position. He's going to have to say how far he is from Niagara-on-the-Lake. Yeah.
I'm always too far from Niagara on the Lake. Although, I do have a bottle of Niagara wine sitting right beside where I record. So, I'm never that far from Niagara on the Lake.
Not in your heart.
The European Super League. That was
an
so
interesting,
interesting
couple of days. Yeah.
just a huge plan, years in the making, that just falls completely flat. Immediately, everybody hated it and it died right away.
Yeah, it kind of had the energy of like the husband who has bought his wife some very adventurous lingerie in Ann Summers for her birthday, and then she opens it and goes, no. He's like, oh, she's gonna love this.
Yeah, she's gonna love this thing that's just called the Breast Enhancer 2000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their optimism shattered.
Women love it when you get them something that makes them look like a kind of trussed up ham.
Well,
that's what I mean.
Right. May the 6th. I think this is my favorite of the questions. The London mayoral elections saw Sadiq Khan re-elected, but which rather embarrassing topographical who lives in places. Which rather embarrassing topographical campaigning error did his Conservative opponent Sean Bailey make?
He campaigned outside of London, didn't he? He went to like...
Yeah, but where?
Fuck.
Fuck. Caldwell Kelly, Notre Dame Institute of Topography. did he go to fucking Orpington?
No, because Orpington,
no,
Orpington...
You're in the wrong one of God's counties.
I was going to say, because Orpington's within the M25, so...
Certain areas would have been allowed to vote, because it's technically London Borough of...
It's Bromley, yeah.
Yeah, Orpington's London, yeah.
So wait, so what is the topographical feature
was it like
that
caused
embarrassment?
It wasn't... like.
Well, it's topographical in the sense that it's related to location.
Oh, so it's not related to like it's not like
it relates
a feature.
To a topos.
Yeah,
I'm seeing the topos, but where is the graph?
Sean Bailey failed to take the high ground and was flanked.
Sean Bailey was enfiladed. Yes,
Sean Bailey found himself surrounded by a tamarisk bush.
So you're not talking about like he campaigned from like the top of
the mound.
Yeah,
yeah. He was actually stood in a small stream.
Yeah. What's that? There's a big escarpment in South London. I forget the name of it.
Hill?
Yes. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea where he went.
It was Brentwood, the home of the sugar hut.
Oh. I knew it began with a B, but I wasn't sure whether it was like Beckenham or something. I don't know.
I was just gonna guess Epsom, that he just went really far out for some reason.
St. Andrews. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was trying to get that TOWIE vote. Mm-hmm. Alas.
So wait, what, why was that embarrassing?
Because it's not London.
Well, because it was outside London.
Oh, it wasn't okay. A London mayoral district, yeah.
Right, okay.
Well, that's fine. I mean, look, you need to get support. Maybe he was like trying to build a coalition outside London and then convince them to move into London to vote for him.
What's funny about that is that that was basically what Sean Bailey was doing, in that he was essentially a candidate who was run for the benefit of people who didn't live in London. But then he actually took that too far and went and literally campaigned outside London.
I'm going to secure the votes of the people of Stoke-on-Trent for my mayoralty of London.
That's right. Yeah, he was doing the Red Wall. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, renowned piss drinker and masturbation enthusiast Brian Rose released a video of himself doing what to promote his campaign?
Oh, I know this.
Yeah, Kizwani West Point gender studies program. he did two boxing videos.
Quinn, Oxford College of Viticulture, Niagara campus. Mm-hmm. It was that he breakdanced, but he did the same breakdancing routine that he knows, because he only knows one breakdancing routine, and it's identical every time he does it, which is very cool.
He did the boxing video. He did two boxing videos as well as part of his campaign.
I believe that he also did boxing, but breakdancing was what I was referring to. But I will give Hussein a point for the
thank you.
Does seem like something Brian Rose would have done.
I wish more mainstream mayoral candidates did, because like the whole Brian Rose campaign kind of reminds me of like sort of democratic machine politics in like 19th century America. Just a lot of sort of substanceless pageantry aimed at like impressing the people you fundamentally disrespect. And I think more politicians should do that kind of thing. I think like Sadiq Khan should do the next London mayoral election like on stilts the whole time, or doing sort of very forced puns with like sleight of hand tricks. I think that'd be great.
Normal height.
I think that'd be great. More people should do that kind of thing.
So my final question, June 26th, a sad day, a day that will live in infamy, when beloved friend of the show, the Labrador-brained Stroop Waffle enjoyer, Tory MP Matt Hancock, resigned as health secretary for being too cool and a Chad after he was caught getting his end away with who?
An Italian wife lady. Of the Oliver Bonus guy. Do I have to say her full name?
You're referring to the right woman, but...
Yeah. Look, we erase women on this show, and that includes in this circumstance.
That's right. And also, and it includes me, because I don't remember.
It was Gina her name, or something.
Her name like was Gina...
Casamaglio or something.
No, it was...
doing some anti-Italian racism.
You're naming Sopranos characters.
I was going to say, it's Gina Castelvetrano. You're like, no, that's a kind of olive, Riley.
Big Pussy Bompensiano.
Yeah, that's right. No, Gina Bacala.
Was it Gina DeLangelo? DeLangelo?
Yeah. Hussein and Alice are both sort of close.
Oh, I'm giving you know what? Fuck it. I'm giving myself a point for that.
Gina Dell'Olio.
Yeah,
that's not actually.
All I know is it's it's now Oliver Bonus's ex-wife.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's very ironic to be cheated on your wife by your wife when you're called Oliver Bonus.
Getting cucked by Matt Hancock.
I mean, you sort of have to be like, well, I lost to the best.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
because if Matt Hancock is fucking you, you can just like put peanut butter on your pussy and then he'll go to town.
Jesus Christ.
God, it's so putting Stroop Waffle on the pussy.
If you like a caramel waffle, you can have a caramel waffle.
Yeah. Her name was, and I believe still is, Gina Coldangelo.
I fucking got it. All right. I'm giving myself a point. Yeah. All right, that puts me at 6 1/6 points.
Wait, Alice, you're keeping score?
Yes, I know. I'm the only one who is.
So I guess you will win.
Yeah, yeah, because absolutely. I will have a number, because I'm taking notes on this shit. Is it me next?
Yeah.
It's me. All right, we're going to talk about July through to September. And of course, we begin with simple country money farmer and Australian man, Lex Greensill. So, The propriety of governance in light of Greensill, an interim report, was released on the 21st of July, 2021, in order to investigate how a number of idealistic civil servants and senior government figures who simply wanted to do the best for their country ended up accidentally promoting a supply chain financing product that turned out to be simply ahead of its time. Widely considered to be a fair report, which pulled no punches in apportioning responsibility, what was the key conclusion of the report? A. David Cameron was too stupid to understand what he was selling, and thus should remain blameless. B. A separate inquiry set up by David Cameron should be undertaken to see if the current rules are too restrictive. C. All concerned should make private apologies to the heads of departments they contacted to get in on the scheme. Or D. Identify that the only party who should reasonably accept any blame was the head of the civil service who died in 2018.
Now, I'm not going to answer this one because I actually did write this question.
Yeah, you can tell yeah. because of all the words in it.
Yeah, that's right. I love words.
The Fay, John McCain Landing Gear Fellowship, U.S. Naval Academy, Annapolis. I'm going to go with C.
Any other offers?
Yeah, hang on a minute. No, I've got to come up with a university.
Kesvani Juilliard School of Accounting. I'm going to go with A, but he was too stupid to be blamed for this.
Edwards Goldsmiths College, Riyadh campus. I believe that it is that they got David Cameron to set up an inquiry to see if the rules are too
strict. You're all wrong. It was D. They pinned it on the dead guy, Jeremy Hayward.
I love the institutions of our great democracy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
Well, it turns out it was completely that dead guy's fault. Mm-hmm. So
convenient.
Well, so, nothing more to see here. Time to move on to the next crisis.
Also in July, football nearly came home after England shone a bunch of laser pointers into Kasper Schmeichel's face and advanced to the final of UEFA 2020. But this buccaneering national spirit was best represented by Charlie Perry, a 25-year-old roofer from Surrey, who went down in English national history for what? A. Drinking 20 cans of Strongbow in one sitting. B. Banging a load of powder. C. Inserting a lit road flare into his anus. Or D. All of the above.
Quinn, the Line School of Viticulture. It's D. All of the above.
Yeah, that and was a gimme.
He wore a Louis Vuitton yeah. bucket hat while doing it.
Yes, he did.
Coolest guy in the country.
I concur with my learned colleague.
This is, all right, just glossing over for a second, something that I wasn't able to fit into the form of a question, but July is also the point at which two estate agents grab and manhandle Professor Sir Chris Whitty, the head of the government's scientific advisory response.
And crucially, they said, way.
It was really like true Dino season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a great time. Unfortunately, all parties have to come to an end, and this one came to an abrupt end in August when Kabul fell to the Taliban. At this point, a 21-year-old Loughborough University physics student and 8chan user named Lord Miles Routledge is stuck in Kabul, becoming the first British lord to try and leave Afghanistan in a hurry since 1842. At one point, he bluffs his way through a Taliban checkpoint by what? A. Flawlessly reciting the Shahada. B. Showing the memes on his phone. C. Claiming to be Welsh rather than British. Or D. DMing the Taliban's Twitter hype man, Malang Coste.
Edwards, the London School of Doxbridge. It was that he pretended to be Welsh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and they didn't know what that was, so let him go.
Yeah, it's definitely C. I couldn't think of like a university to give myself, but yeah, it's definitely C.
It is C, yes.
An incredible own on the Welsh.
Mm-hmm. Also fleeing Kabul and piloting the brains of your mum's weirdest friends on Twitter and calling government ministers and threatening to destroy them was a former Royal Marine named Penn Farthing, who is attempting to coordinate the evacuation from Kabul of what? Is it A?
He'd already defeated the sword farthing.
Was it A, the Kabul branch of secret cinema? B, crates of unused British flags? C, Lord Miles Routledge? Or D, cats and dogs?
Kisvani, University of Bristol, but just because I wanted life experience, cats and dogs.
Yeah, Quinn Fortnum and Mason College of Astronomy. Yes, I concur with my learned friend. It is cats and dogs.
He successfully evacuated many cats and dogs, less their Afghan veterinary staff.
Although I like the idea of unused British flags, not to be confused with the soiled British flags, which go in a separate pile.
It's still in the foil. And then, of course, as the vibes continued to get worse, at the very end of September in Britain, our supply line crisis really began to bite and things started to collapse. There was no fizz in fizzy drinks. There were fist fights in petrol station forecourts. Supermarkets began
about commemorative coins.
Yes, began to disguise their empty shelves with cardboard cutouts of fruit and vegetables. And the proximate cause of this was a severe shortage in lorry drivers, many of whom had left back to the EU because Britain was shit. The government took decisive action by attempting to offer these EU HGV drivers visas to work back in the country. As of time of going to press, how many HGV drivers did they manage to entice back? Was it A, 2,000, B, 200, C, 20, or D, 2 lorry drivers?
Bethay, Duke University, racist guy from California fellowship. It's D, 2.
Quinn, Berghain School of Expressive Dance. yes, it was 2.
It was not. It was 20. So I'm tired of you people doing the government down.
They got 10 times as many as we thought. So much better.
They did. And this is why Keir Starmer has to praise the Conservative Party for their achievements.
Mm-hmm. They went further. The lorry drivers. They were dinner at my house because they will all fit.
I mean, it could have been 21 if Keir Starmer had passed that lorry driving test.
Yeah. I won't lie to you. It's going to be a buffet situation. I don't have a big enough dining table, but there will be space enough for everyone to grab a plate and sit wherever you like.
And this is the end of my questions. I've taken us all the way from July through to the end of September.
Where only 4 events happened.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, don't worry, because only 4 events happened between October and December as well. And it's now my turn. All right, 15th October, Conservative MP Sir David Amos dies after being stabbed multiple times during his constituency surgery at Belfair's Methodist Church in Leigh-on-Sea.
Keeping it lighthearted, still.
A 25-year-old male British national and treat the killing as an act of terror. There was an immediate outcry from US UK legacy media and politicians in response to the killing. What was the action they demanded? A, a national day of mourning. B, mandatory minimum sentences for knife crime. C, a ban on online anonymity, or D, mandatory reading of Flora Gill columns.
By the way, Edwards, the David Baddiel School of Mentions. It is a ban on online anonymity.
Yes.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Also important to remember, that didn't factor into this at all.
No, exactly. They also did want to occasionally meet their constituents through a thick layer of Lexan or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, also, while we're on this, I've got a bonus question for everyone. Does anyone know what was recently released to commemorate the memory of David Ames murdered government
servants? That was trolling. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Oh, fuck. Oh, that is a shame. That is a shame. which goes to show.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. 30 October. The 2-week United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP26, is held in Glasgow after being postponed in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. A deal is agreed by world leaders, which includes a, quote, phase down, unquote, of unabated coal power, a 30% cut in methane emissions by 2030, plans to halt deforestation by 2030, and increased financial support for developing countries. Which of these events also took place at the same time? A, Richard Branson had his haircut patented as, quote, definitionally age appropriate, unquote. B, the UK's largest clean energy utility supplier went into administration. C, Sajid Javid declared a new plan to mix experimental anti-COVID-19 antiviral medication into the UK cocaine supply. Or D, a Times reporter accused Keir Starmer of infidelity.
Caldwell Kelly, Starmer School of HGV driving was B.
You are correct. Mm. As a side note, a Times reporter did accuse Keir Starmer of infidelity, but it was much earlier in the year. It was not in October. And then he went silent for like 3 days.
Because he wasn't as much of a shagger as Matt Hancock.
Yeah, apparently.
I welcome the accusation of infidelity, but I would encourage them to go further and consider whether I'd be up to the task.
I'd encourage them to go further and give me a go.
I'm like a yogurt.
I would encourage women to go further and have sex with me, not only allegedly.
Great. I could listen to you do the Keir Starmer voice for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look.
It's genuinely become, like, definitional on, you know, social media now. People doing that voice saying, "Are welcome to Prime Minister." Like, everyone does. Like, Milo, you've
talismanic, yeah.
You've genuinely created something. It's incredible.
You need a phrase to get into any accent, and that is the Keir Starmer one, saying, "Are welcome the Prime Minister."
3 November, after the Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards found that Conservative MP Owen Paterson breached lobbying rules with a recommended 30-day suspension, the House of Commons voted in response. What did they vote to do? A, remove Owen Paterson from the chamber. B, raise the limit on lobbying contributions to sitting MPs. C, revise the Standards Committee to make it not a crime. Or D, a vote of no confidence in Johnson's government.
We're all just trying to think of university jokes now.
Yeah.
The joke has become the self-looking ice cream
Kisvani,
cone.
Kisvani, University of Austin, adjunct professor of phrenology and media studies. I'm going to go with C on this one.
You are
they
correct.
Tried to make it legal. Wow, yeah.
Really just the most brazen example of marking your own homework we had for a while. Yes.
All right. And my final question, for December, the Daily Mirror publishes a leaked photo of Johnson at a virtual Christmas quiz in Downing Street on 15th December 2020, sat in person with two colleagues when London was under COVID-19 lockdown rules that banned household mixing. This led to which of the following consequences? A, a retroactive jubilee on all restrictions. B, Boris Johnson condemned in the House of Commons by his own party. C, a Labour lead in the polls. Or D, a vote to codify that rules are for peasants.
Starmer, welcoming college, bipartisan university. I believe it was a Labour lead in the polls.
that is in fact correct.
20 points ahead.
Finally, 20 points ahead.
Forensic.
Yeah, Alice, are you 20 points ahead of us?
I am now 1, 2, 3, 4. I am 10 1/6 points ahead, which goes to show that like having me as a leader is, you know, this is the way forward for the Labour Party. We're gonna end the long Corbyn effect.
All right, and so I believe that now that we've gotten to the end of the year, Hussein has some treats for us about some columns.
There were a lot of columns. There were too many columns, I would argue, this year. So I have not been able to put in all of them. If we have some time at the end, I might kind of mention some favorites that didn't make it onto this list. However, for sake of the quiz, I've chosen some, but not necessarily chronological, but I think they best tell the story of this year. So they're a mixture of multiple choice and just guess and fill in the blanks, just to kind of throw you off a little bit. So to start off with, I'm going to read a paragraph.
You're going muscle confused.
I'm going to read a paragraph and you're going to guess which columnist wrote it. And for bonus points, you're going to tell me what month they wrote it in the year. Okay, the combination of Brexit and Corbynism had me in a state of physical... Fuck, I'm not going to be able to read this. Of physical needs. Even when I looked composed and sounded detached in print, I was inwardly pacing in knotted agitation. I'd slept too little, ate and drank too much. I was distracted at home, impatient and shouty with my children. In photos from that winter, I looked puffy and grey. I knew that social media was the main pipeline bringing anger and anxiety into every corner of my waking life. I tried to ration my use during the 2000s. 2019 election campaign, relying on other sources to find out what was going on. But by then, I had already been contaminated. The stress was in the atmosphere of British politics, a fine chemical mist that coated everything. It was absorbed through my skin. It got into my blood, into my heart. Okay, so who wrote it? And for bonus points, what month did they write it in?
Edwards, Oxford College of English Language Learning, Regent Street. I believe that this was Raphael Baer, and I'm going to take a punt on March.
Okay, any other answers?
Buffet, Northwestern University, guy who carried a backpack in high school fellowship. I believe that it was Raphael Baer in January.
Nate is correct on both fronts. It was Raphael Baer, and he wrote it January 16th, 2021.
Incredible.
I only remember this because I made fun of him, and then the QCs went insane on me, and I remember that was in January.
What
a great day that was.
That was when the QCs came after me. And there's a very fun 10K post episode where we talk about that specific subject.
We do indeed.
Okay, next question. This is a headline question. I'm going to give you four choices as to who wrote it. And for bonus points, you're going to tell me what publication it was written in. I've become a pariah just for having children. This was written by A, Julie Bindle, B, Camilla Hogarth Coutts, C, Toby Young, D, none of the above.
Caldwell Kelly, Dulwich College, Shanghai campus, D, none of the above, but it was in the mail.
That is wrong. That is wrong. Someone actually wrote this. Okay. Guesses.
Riley Quinn, Elon Musk, Mars University of Viticulture, the Martian studies. It was the Coots lady.
Incorrect. Camilla Hogarth Coutts does not exist. It was a columnist I made up in my head.
Yeah, it's a takeoff of Sophia Money Coutts, who does.
That's right. It was a mixture of someone who I know in real life, whose last name is Hogarth Coutts, and a name that I got from the Telegraph's columnist. It was, in fact, Toby Young, who wrote it in The Spectator. I wish I could give you a little sample of it, but unfortunately it was paywalled, so I wasn't able to do it. However, the gist was very much, no one will contact me or be my friend because I have children, which is something the left hate.
Yeah, that's sure. Right. Yeah, that's the only thing keeping all of us from being friends with Toby Young.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to read another paragraph now, and you're going to tell me who wrote it and what it was in relation to. So your bonus point is what it was in relation to. Since my beloved mother died, I have become an executor. I have this top tip to pass on. When you register a death, the name on the death certificate has to be the exact same one as used on all important documents to probate for probate to happen. If it isn't, you are in a world of pain as well as grief. Well, I was pretty confident that my twice married mother's name was Charlotte Maria Offlow Johnson Wall, but it turns out that Maria was her invention, either when she became a Roman Catholic or her second marriage to an American whose name was Maria, and she went around by eight variants of names used here and in the US where she was Mrs. War. I am happy to
Caldwell Kelly, Jeff Samuels, School of Law, Rachel Johnson, and it's about her brother fucking like knowing Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, I concur with that's my correct. Esteemed colleague.
I just want to say that like it takes four paragraphs of Rachel Johnson to get to her anecdote about Ghislaine Maxwell in this Spectator series, in which there have been five articles that have either been very sympathetic to Ghislaine Maxwell or have outright like defended her in relation to Jeffrey Epstein.
Interesting.
I wonder what's happening there. I imagine nothing particularly suspicious. Nothing to question about. Okay, next question. This is another who wrote the article, and for bonus points, where was it written? In the 1940s, they kept coming into the office, even when Hitler's bombs kept falling down. Who wrote it, and for what newspaper? A, Dan Hodges, B, Charles Moore, C, Montgomery Preston, Charlesworth III, D, Ian Duncan Smith, E,
Riley Quinn,
above.
Riley Quinn, Sealand College of Viticulture. It was Ian Duncan Smith.
And
head of the
Tory
Party.
And where was it written?
It was written in the mail.
Congratulations. The point and the bonus point to you.
I remember it because I think about that pretty often.
Yeah, there was like it was one of many get to the office columns that always gets written slightly before lockdowns are imposed. So I'm looking forward to yet another variation of this in 2022. Okay, the next one, you guys are going to have to fill in a blank. Blank was an ideological magpie, always seeking the on-trend woke concern through which his desire to manifest his, quote, intensely personal feelings to give voice or violence to his movement's cultural grievance might be most aptly and impactfully expressed. And then Corbin. It follows for a bit, and then it follows towards the end. His reign of terror can be seen as a violent manifestation of what has since been come to known as wokeness. So who was the blank that this paragraph is addressing?
It's by Simon Sebag Montefiore, and it's Stalin.
Ah, it's not, unfortunately.
Damn.
Oh, yeah, and for bonus points, where was it written?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Oh, God, hang on. It's on the tip of my mind.
Yeah, it's a very good one. It's also a very... It's written by a guy who features very frequently on this show.
Courtauld Kelly, just slapping side of a tank and saying this is a great bit of kit, Institute of Military History. It is Corbin, right?
No, it's someone worse than Corbin. It is in fact Osama bin Laden. And it was written by none other than Brendan O'Neill in Spiked. It was not many people read the article. However, the tweet that went viral was, quote, people forget just how woke Al-Qaeda was. Bin Laden was an environmentalist. He believed in cancel culture. He embraced the Islamist politics of victimhood. 9/11 was a hyper-violent form of identity politics.
Well, they destroyed the Twin Towers because they were a representation of believing there were only two genders.
Exactly. I am always saying this. Okay.
Yeah, and they should have built at least three towers.
They should have replaced it with... No, they replaced it with one World Trade Center. Showing that gender. There is only one gender. Yeah. The fellas.
Yeah, it's a one gender solution. Yeah.
Right. And what's crucial about the new World Trade Center is that it's no longer a rectangular shape. I guess you could call it an oblong. Maybe it was like some kind of prism, but like its vagueness alludes to the fact that like it is gender fluid.
Absolutely.
Very few people are allowed to say it in New York. Okay, and the final one to end this quiz is one of my favorites written of this year. In what newspaper was this written in? And because this isn't like a famous columnist, the bonus point is if you know who wrote it. Greta is grumpier than my daughter and smaller than far less inclined to compromise and super determined and straight talking a perfectionist and not inclined to let those of us with less energy and or certainty off the hook. And that's when I realized she actually reminds me of my wife. Both my wife, as she is now 57, and my wife, when she was 15, Greta's age, when she became famous, and we were both at school together.
My wife, when she was 15, excuse me.
That has to be Charles Moore. Cannot be anyone else.
I guess I must be predisposed. I guess I must be predisposed to idolize small, bossy, fearless bonds and to seek protection of them too, although both would recoil at the idea of requiring any protection. It was not Charles Moore who wrote it.
Pedophilia defense, which is, but she was a girl boss. Is a powerful idea.
Yeah, it was not Charles Moore, unfortunately. Okay, so like, what newspaper was this written in for? Like the first point.
Okay, Quinn, Marianas Trench, College of Deep Sea Viticulture. I know it was the Times.
Yeah,
and
I was going to say it Telegraph. Was Fuck.
No, it was the guy who looks like a sort of puffy Robert Downey Jr. It was Robert Crampton.
It was. 2 points. 2 points.
Robert Crampton, fuck!
And the title...
Fuck that guy!
And the title was, Bolshe Greta Reminds Me of My Wife.
Amazing. Amazing.
Incredible.
And for that...
My wife! Yeah.
The fact that you remembered it that clearly, Riley, wow, that must have caused deep psychic trauma.
He's getting good, good Anglo brain.
When I read that article, what stuck in my head was just how weird the guy looked. And then I looked him up and I was like, oh, he's the son of Peter Crampton.
Yeah, the guy from the pig guy, the inflatable pig guy.
Yeah, sure.
You're thinking of Peter Frampton. No,
I was making a Peter Frampton joke, thank you. But I couldn't remember the name of the band Smashing Pumpkins. And so I just like, the pig guy, the inflatable pig guy from the inflatable pig band. So thank you for not humoring me at all on that one.
Smashing pig.
It's he's another one of these guys who had like a pretty cool dad, but who sucks, basically. So like his dad was like...
Robert Crampton's
like,
interesting because I've known him, or rather about him, for years because my parents used to get a magazine that he wrote a column in. But the thing about him that distances him from the other columnists we talk about is he doesn't write about politics at all. He's like a guy who writes about like having a dad brain. Like all of his columns are like, they're quite like Hancock-esque rambles about like, oh, my wife's bought me an exercise bike and oh boy, is it hard. Like that's the sort of
weird
Adrian Childs. Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit weirder, but he also has a more coherent writing style than Adrian Childs.
Yeah, Adrian Childs is more just like in the corner of the dementia home, like just reeling off a thought.
Oh, yeah. Adrian Childs is just like, what if you gave like a Valium pill a pen and allowed it to write a column?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that brings us to the end of it, doesn't it?
It does.
That was 2021. That was all of the things that happened.
Well, yeah, there were no other things. You know what? I just want to say that like one thing that I'm very disappointed about with everyone here is that no one brought up Geronimo.
That is true. Fuck. There was recently a story that they did not determine Geronimo had any traces of bovine tuberculosis.
Keir Starmer murdered that alpaca, that innocent alpaca
killed for no reason. For the love of the sport alone.
This is particularly embarrassing for Nate because, of course, his former regiment, the 101st Airborne, actually changed their motto in honor of the alpaca from Geronimo to Geronimo.
You've got a bunch of the details wrong, but I will still go with the joke because, yes, our unit motto was, in fact, Geronimo.
Keir Starmer, not wanting to appear flashy, is hunting the second most dangerous game, alpaca.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's it. The silence you're hearing right now is our sheer exhaustion with the year of our Lord 2021.
That is correct.
But we greatly appreciate you being Patreon subscribers and getting this bonus episode.
The alpaca's dead.
Anyway, so we will be back with regular scheduled episodes next week, and we will ring in 2022, the year that surely everything will get better, because there was both a Dee Reem and a Howard Jones song that told me this would be the case. Until then, though, lady and gentlemen, it has in fact been a pleasure and an honor to podcast with you in 2021, and I look forward to more good times ahead.
Absolutely.
I used to be in the band Dee Reem. Now it's going to be 2022.
All right. Happy New Year, everybody.
Goodbye,
bye,
everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.